as part of it tomorrow. In tune at 4:30, three pianists will be performing live. Lucy Parham and the actor Dominic West are celebrating Debussy. The former New Generation artist Ashley Wass plays part of Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony transcribed, and there's the Armenian jazz pianist Tigran Hamasyan. That's on In Tune tomorrow from 4:30. Now on Radio 3, it's 11 o'clock. That means it's time for Jazz Lineup with Julian Joseph.
Hello. On today's show, an interview with superstar singer and pianist Diana Krall.
I always look at music or songs as small movies or films or short stories. And this particular experience was a much more cinematic, visual, creating a character out of a time and not trying to recreate the era, but just my interpretation of 1920s music.
More from that interview, plus music from her new album, Glad Rag Doll, later on in the show. We've also music from the quartet of trumpeter Quentin Collins and sax man Brandon Allen, recorded at this year's Scarborough Jazz Festival. Plus, Kevin Legendre is here with another classic plucked from the vaults as part of our regular Now's the Time feature. Kevin, what have you unearthed for us this month?
It's one of the great mood albums recorded in jazz in the last 15 years. It's Brian Blade's Fellowship, and it features glorious sounds like this.
From Brian Blade's Fellowship album, thank you, Kevin. First up, saxophonist Courtney Pine has a brand new album, House of Legends, which depicts honourable, strong people, celebrates African Caribbeanism, and generally creates a party atmosphere. Pine is on good form as he demonstrates his virtuosic soprano skills. This is his tribute to the founder of London's world-famous Notting Hill Carnival, Claudia Jones.
Thank you.
Courtney Pine's tribute to journalist and political activist important to London's Caribbean community in the 50s and early 60s, who also founded the Notting Hill Carnival. That was Claudia Jones. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Julian Joseph, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online, and on digital radio. And as well as jazz on Radio 3, remember there's plenty more jazz across the BBC airwaves, all available via the BBC iPlayer. And tomorrow night, there's Jazz on 3 with Jez Nelson. And I'm very happy to say that Jez joins me on the line. Welcome, Jez.
Hi, Julian.
Well, last time we had you on, we were talking about the BBC's piano season and the fact that you're learning piano. How are the lessons going with pianist Alexander Hawkins?
How can I describe? I'd say baby steps. I think I mentioned last time I'm learning this tune, Mysterioso, Thelonious Monk. In fact, you said to me something which, you know, I can't get out of my head, which I thought it was simple, when you said something like, you know, it's never simple with Monk. And I've certainly been discovering it. I think I've got the basic tune down. I can play the tune, but not, I wouldn't say I could play it well. Alex has been trying to sort of teach me some of the kind of the basic points of improvisation, which I'm struggling with, but I'm absolutely loving it. I'm really enjoying it.
What are those basic points that you're struggling with?
It's interesting because I listen to so much music. Mm-hmm. I could imagine improvising in my head. Mm-hmm. So he's, I think, I don't know if he's just being nice to me, but he says I'm kind of rhythmically doing maybe some of the right things.
Right.
And I know when something's wrong.
Right.
But I think the thing I'm struggling with is he's been, you know, chord changes and knowing where to go and sort of the speed at which you guys operate. That's the thing. I've always been amazed by watching people improvise, but I'm even more amazed now because I'm thinking, well, how do you know where you're going?
Right.
And that's the thing I'm really struggling with. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And it seems to have changed your perception about some of the technical aspects of how to play this music.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's interesting. You just sit down, even at the very basic level I'm at, you then go, okay, I now understand a little bit more about the way this music, the music is put together. So, my respect increases even more.
How's the preparation going for the, how's the classic preparations going for your famous launch of the London Jazz Festival? What's it going to be like this year?
Yes, it's interesting you say that because I hadn't quite realised, but just putting this together, we have realised this is the 10th year that we've had a programme on the opening night of the London Jazz Festival.
Wow.
And I think it's maybe fourth or fifth year that we've come from Ronnie Scott's, which is always a real honour for me to sit on that stage. And we're there this year on November the 9th, live on Radio 3 from 11 o'clock. We have an excellent lineup. We have a Swiss band called Hildegard Learn to Fly, who sort of work yodeling into jazz. There's some great clips on the YouTube worth checking out.
Okay.
A band called Go Go Penguin from Manchester, who are very much, sort of very, very heavily influenced by the Esbjorn Svensson trio, but I think they're going to be big. And then Terence Blanchard, who I'm sure you know well, Julian.
Very well,
And, you know, I've got great memories of seeing him playing at Ronnie's with Art Blakey. So he's got his quintet, which would be good. And then Ambrose Akimunsiri, the trumpet player, he's doing something with his drummer. So I think it's a good lineup, isn't it?
That's excellent. I can't wait for that.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, brilliant. Well, I hear there's going to be a change in your schedules for your program tomorrow.
Yes, sadly, the saxophonist David S. Ware has just passed away.
Such sad news.
It is sad news, and he was just 62. In fact, he'd had a kidney transplant a couple of years ago, and I think it was related to complications around that. Now, I mean, Julian, I mean, I think he was a giant of the tenor saxophone.
Definitely.
You know, his great hero was Sonny Rollins, and he spent time, following Sonny around a little bit, and I think potentially studying with him. And really, I think when you hear him, you really do hear echoes of Sonny. And I think, you know, hugely powerful, sort of undeniably spiritual and sort of touching, uncompromising sound that he made. And, you know, although he'd been playing since the 70s, it wasn't really until the late 80s and early 90s that he perhaps sort of broke through. I mean, interestingly enough, Branford Marsalis, this seems like a completely different era in the jazz business, but Bramford was the head of jazz, I think, at Columbia, and amazingly signed David S. Ware to this major label, and he made a few albums which were extraordinary because he didn't kind of compromise in any way, and yet he got sort of all of this attention, and I think that's when most people got to hear of him. But a really genuinely extraordinary player who, I don't know, just his sound has always, you know, really, really moved me.
Me too. It's a very sad news, and you've selected a special track from David S. Ware for us to play, and what is that going to be?
Okay, just to say, on the program, we've got this session that we recorded with his band back in 1999. But yes, this is excellent. This is from, well, music composed by Sonny Rollins, the Freedom Suite, and with the band that he put together in the late 80s and then stayed with for many years, and he was delighted with this band. Matthew Shipp on piano, William Parker bass, Guillermo E. Brown on drums. And this is the first movement of Sonny Rollins' Freedom Suite.
The tenor sax of David S. Ware, who passed away recently, and that was Movement 1 of Sonny Rollins' Freedom Suite. And my thanks to Jez. And you can hear a specially recorded session from 1999 of David S. Ware featured on this week's Jazz on 3 with Jez Nelson tomorrow night at 11. As this year's London Jazz Festival, in association with BBC Radio 3, approaches, there's a very special jazz lineup recording, and it's a 75th tribute concert in memory of the late British composer and bassist and bandleader Graham Collier. The event is being held at BBC's Maida Vale Studios on the 14th of November. Tickets are free. For information, check out the BBC Ticket website. You'll find that link on the Jazz Lineup webpage. Coming up later on the show, we've an interview with jazz superstar Diana Krall and music from her new album. Plus, I've got concert music recorded at this year's Scarborough Jazz Festival featuring the Quentin Collins Brandon Allen Quartet. But right now, it's time for our regular monthly feature, Now's the Time with Kevin Legendre. Well, it's good to see you, and it's lovely to deal with this particular album by the drummer Brian Blade. Tell us a little bit about why this came in your Now's the Time choice.
As I said at the top of the show, it's a great work of mood and atmosphere. Mm-hmm. It's an album that you listen to and you just immerse yourself in, and it really shows how great musicians can create these pictures, these landscapes. There's one piece called Mojave, which is inspired by the desert, mm-hmm. and he talks about the emotion that the land actually inspires in his notes for the album. And he also mentions this this other quality of the music, and that is melodic prayers. And I think a lot of the pieces are these beautiful theme tunes which have this kind of prayer-like quality and evoke all these images.
Well, the album is called Fellowship. It came out in 1998 on Blue Note. And we're going to listen to the first of your choices, which is Red River Revel. Thank you. Brian Blade from the Fellowship album of 1998. That was Red River Revel. Well, it's good to hear his playing. You were talking about it revealed another side of his musical character, having known him as a drummer. I'll agree with that because his background was playing with Joshua Redman. Before that, he played in Ellis Marsalis's trio. And generally, he was seen as one of the really straight-ahead, swinging drummers, which he still is, but it revealed another completely different side of his musical personality. And through Red River Revel, one of the exciting things is that there's this distinctive tone and this, as you said, meditative quality. And do you think asking or incorporating Daniel Lanois as the producer made such a big influence on that?
Absolutely. There are two things about Brian Blade. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, he's a great hard-swinging drummer, mm-hmm. played with Joshua Redman, currently playing with Wayne Shorter. But he's also somebody with a strong pop sensibility who's always, I think, had an avowed interest in pop culture. So if Wayne Shorter is a main credit as a sideman, then Joni Mitchell is another. And I think he's played with Bob Dylan as well. So what you hear on this album is the jazz and the pop culture coming together. And to a certain extent, Daniel Lanois is a kind of glue between the two. And I think it's clear, very much, if you listen to the textures and just what's been done with the sound quality of this album and some of the composing as well, there's an influence of U2's The Joshua Tree. If you think about some of the anthems on that piece, mm-hmm. you hear how they've permeated some of his melodies and these great atmospheres that he creates. The other thing that I think is very, very clear is that there's a little bit of an afterglow of Pat Metheny and early Bobby McFerrin as well. If you think about what Bobby was doing with pieces like Feline and Sightless Bird on that mm-hmm. first album, these mm-hmm. wide open spaces, mm-hmm. very country-like, very folkish atmospheres, mm-hmm. yet at the same time, because of the instrumentation that you have here, two horns, mm-hmm. alto sax, tenor sax, two guitars, bass, piano, Wurlitzer and drums, you've got a very, very rich palette which gives you all of these textures and all of this nuance and detail.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's nice to hear Myron Walden in his early days trying to... And he brings out this exciting quality. And yeah, Pat Metheny, I would definitely agree with that influence, and as well as those things like Sightless Bird from Bobby McFerrin. It does have that... And yet, it's less. It doesn't have the discipline. It's not the right word, but it doesn't have the sort of sense of confinement.
There's the rub.
Yeah.
There's the rub. We talk about pop culture, and that's in the melodies, in some of the atmospheres. Yet at the same time, you're also talking about long pieces where the players are given the chance to improvise, and also not just in the improvisations but in some of the unison lines, the melodic motifs, the way that pieces go through these different passages of ebb and flow. I think you have the jazz aesthetic coming through loud and clear. What I think is really, really important about this album is that on the one hand, you do have, as I said, this meditative quality mm-hmm. where everything is very, very relaxed. Yet also, there's a lot of hard swing as well. And he's playing with variations of tempo and variations of pulse. So in Red River Revel, you hear this very relaxed, kind of really on the beat, just four notes from the opening bass player. Very, very, very laid back. And then bang, at a key moment, it's about two minutes in, it goes off into four bars of really bracing swing. You think that's going to carry on, it drops again. So it's playing with you all the time. You're thinking, I'm very relaxed, I'm in this mood of complete immersion in the music. It jumps up to another level of energy, it goes off, the improvising is hard. Myron Walden mm-hmm. has a hard, grainy sound on the alto, mm-hmm. and I think that Brian Blade was very, very astute in his choice of him as a band member, because he contrasts a lot with these very, very meditative pedal steel guitar tones. So you've got a kind of silky and slender quality on the one hand, and then this tougher, grainier quality in the horn, and that works really well.
And the soft tone, I guess, of Melvin Butler's tenor sax. Yeah. So
the contrasts are very marked.
Yeah, it's a good contrast. So the next piece we have is called Folklore. What is it about this piece that you see?
Well, the way that it starts with this pygmy chant, and he actually talks about that in the sleeve notes. It gives a mention, a kind of an acknowledgement of pygmies, basically. And that in itself just sets up this very, very, very beautiful atmosphere where it's like a dance.
Yeah.
It's like a dance. Mm-hmm. And you hear these six beats. Mm-hmm. And that kind of creates a sort of circular motion that keeps running throughout.
Yeah.
And from that sample, which has these voices, these chants, it then goes on to develop into this series of really nice melodic motifs. I think there are six or seven of them, where you get the two horns in unison, and they create these lovely textures. And then at one point, just after those motifs, you have these really, really nice guitar triplets, which kind of take it in another direction before it just takes off again.
Let's talk a little bit about the musicians that he's got on this record. John Cowherd, he's got on piano and Wurlitzer. Dave Easley playing pedal steel. That's a lovely texture. Jeff Parker.
It's dreamy.
Yeah.
There's a kind of dream state quality, which I think it suits the writing. And the thing which we might add at this point is that Brian Blade, as well as being a great drummer, is also a singer. Mm-hmm. The last album that he made is called Mama Rosa, marks his debut as a vocalist. And I think that you've got that throughout. You have a vocal quality, you have a lyrical quality, which comes through in the way that he's arranged the horns and the guitars. So even though this is an all-instrumental album, I think that if you listen carefully, you can hear that the person who's conceived it, who's created the music, is a vocalist.
Mm. Well, shall we listen to it?
Let's do it.
This is Folklore. Brian Blade and Folklore, taken from the Fellowship album. This is the featured album on Now's the Time with Kevin Legendre, who's my special guest here today. Well, let's go to our last piece, and it's called If You See Lura. Now, it's hard to say, actually, because it's quite gentle music, although he keeps it really uplifted. But this is sort of a little more sedate. And what is he trying to say here?
I think it's some kind of love song.
Mm.
I don't know who Lura is, mm-hmm. if Lura is a person. I'm not entirely sure, but I think this album is also just bathed in love as well. And you know, fellowship is an important word. It's about fraternity. It's about togetherness.
Mm.
It's about respect for other people, even though that might sound idealistic. I think that really is the whole kind of principle that the music's built on.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely there.
And what's lovely about this piece is that it starts off with a strong texture. Melvin Butler plays soprano through this piece, which is a lovely texture to hear. And it creates a great texture with Myron's alto as well as guitar on the melody. It's Jeff Parker's guitar on the melody. And it evolves into each different section. So after it goes from the melodic statement, it sort of seamlessly evolves into a sort of two-chorded section for the bass solo, which Chris Thomas plays.
What I really like about that is the fact that during that solo, he keeps it melodic, and he doesn't play too many notes. He's just on those two chords, and the variations are relatively restrained. And I think that ability to keep things melodic, even in the improvisations, is the key to the record, is that there's always a motif that you can hang on to as a listener. I think that's why it made such an impact on me when I first heard it. It's because, unlike a lot of albums in improvised music, there was so much that I could remember.
Sure.
There was so much that actually stayed in my mind. Yeah. Because the magic, not just on this piece, but on many other pieces as well, is that they've reduced the key statements to three or four notes. You've got that in Red River Revel and in Folklore as well, those other two pieces that we were discussing, where you have these lovely motifs, which are no more than four notes, and they really, really work. The descending horns, that lovely descending line that you get at the end of this piece as well, is like a swoon. It's an incredibly romantic statement that just rounds off not just this piece, but I think the whole album, which leaves you with that kind of glow. Because everything is so, it's so from the heart.
It's almost like this particular piece is like the epicenter of the record's conception.
Yeah, it's a very, very strong theme, or a series of strong themes, but it also captures that deep emotion that I think really defines the record. Mm-hmm. You know, fellowship, togetherness, brotherhood, respect for other people, respect for other cultures. That's what Folklore is about as well.
Well, fellowship and the ensemble, it has changed over the years, hasn't it, the personnel. He replaced Jeff Parker with Kurt Rosenwinkel on the next record, but that's another story.
That's another story. That's another album. That's, I think, it's Perceptual or
it is,
Seasons
yeah.
Change.
Yeah. And Perceptual.
Yeah. They're very beautiful records as well. And maybe at some point in the future, we'll come back to another Brian Blade album. Because he's, as far as I'm concerned, he's not just a great drummer. He's a major talent. He's a major artist.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's really been great to revisit this record and pull out some other influences from a man who's become one of the mainstays and trendsetters on the drums in recent times. So that's the music of Brian Blade. Thank you, Kevin Legendre.
Thank you.
This is If You See Lura. That was Brian Blade, and If You See Lura from his Fellowship album of 1998. Thank you, Kevin, for your enthusiasm and need to bring attention to this album of Brian Blade's.
My pleasure. Thank you, Julian.
And Brian Blade is coming to play the London Jazz Festival this year with piano legend Chick Corea and bassist Christian McBride. And rest assured, Jazz Lineup will be there to record the concert, which is on Saturday, November the 17th at the Barbican Centre. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Julian Joseph, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online and on digital radio. Time now for tonight's concert set, which was recorded at Scarborough Jazz Festival this year. And it features music from a British quartet co-led by trumpeter Quentin Collins and saxophonist Brandon Allen. The set was captured on the opening night of the festival in the Grand Hall at the Spa and showcases a fine band creating a strong cohesive atmosphere in the spirit of what has now become one of Britain's flagship festivals. The band features Ross Stanley on organ, Enzo Zerilli on drums, Brandon Allen plays the tenor saxophone, Quentin Collins the trumpet. Opening with Brandon's composition and the title track of their current album, What's It Gonna Be? Here are the Quentin Collins Brandon Allen Quartet. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. And welcome to the Scarborough Jazz Festival. We are the Quentin Collins, Brandon Allen Quartet. I'd like to introduce the members of the band, starting with, on the organ, Mr. Ross Stanley. On the drums, you met him already this afternoon. He hails from Torino in Italy, but now resides in northwest London, Mr. Enzo Zerilli. My dear friend and one of my favourite sax players in the whole wide world, on the tenor saxophone and soprano saxophone, Mr. Brandon Allen.
And on the trumpet, the amazing Quentin Collins. So that first tune was the title track of our first album, and that tune was called What's It Gonna Be? We'd like to play another tune of mine, and this is supposed to depict sitting under a tree, meditating, lying in a beautiful, cool lake, or doing anything that makes you feel peaceful and happy, basically. And we seek to create the atmosphere with this tune, and it's entitled Beauty in Quiet Places. Thank you.
The Quentin Collins and Brandon Allen Quartet recorded at this year's Scarborough Jazz Festival in the Grand Hall at the Spa as part of tonight's concert set. Ross Stanley was on the organ, Enzo Zerilli the drums, Quentin Collins played the trumpet, Brandon Allen played saxophone. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Julian Joseph, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online and on digital radio. Well, I had the great pleasure of speaking with piano and vocal superstar Diana Krall a short while ago, who is excited about her new album, Glad Rag Doll. It's produced by T-Bone Burnett, has a contemporary and yet authentic sound where she's taken a detour from her usual classic sound into another realm which has stretched her musically, extended her remit, and even got her using a different and much older piano. From Glad Rag Doll, this is There Ain't No Sweet Man That's Worth the Salt of My Tears.
Shaking like a leaf on a tree that's gonna lose from the stem. Shaking like a leaf on a tree, 'cause I'm coming loose from my man. I'm like a weeping willow, weeping on my pillow. For years and years, there ain't no sweet man that's worth the salt of my tears. Down and down he dragged me, like a Fendi nag me. For years and years, there ain't no sweet man that's worth the salt of my tears. Although I am baby blue, still I am true. I must tell him goodbye, rather than have that gonna lay me down and just die. So broken hearted sisters, aggravating sisters, lend me your ears. There ain't no sweet man that's where the salt of my tears. Just die. So broken heart and sisters, aggravating sisters, lend me your ears. There ain't no sweet man that's worth the salt of my tears.
There ain't no sweet man that's worth the salt of my tears. That's Diana Krall, and that's taken from her new album, Glad Rag Doll. Welcome, Diana. It's great to see you.
It's always great to see you, Julian. Thank you.
We're here to talk about your new album, Glad Rag Doll, which is a beautiful record.
Thank you.
And I'll tell you why. Certainly from my perspective as a pianist and musician, you really get a chance to play, and your playing sounds great.
Thanks.
You're like smoking.
I had this piano that made me play a little like, I'm going to take you here, and you might not want to go here, but you're going to like it when you do. So it was nice to work with a different kind of piano, because it was pretty, I'm working with a different piano now, and it's definitely a different feel and a different sound, just like you'd have. I mean, I play with guitar players who have different instruments for different sounds, so it makes sense that you wouldn't have just one instrument. So it does bring out a different different things.
And it's an early Steinway from
1890 Steinway. And I do play Steinway, but I've got a kind of a reworked player piano that I have out that I can upright, that I can play, or I can have Fats Waller playing by the magic of
the dots.
Piano rolls, yeah, should be the dots. Would probably work better than the computer, which sort of skipped notes, I noticed. But, I mean, that's kind of my dream, is to have, like, James P. Johnson and then Floyd Kramer and then Fats Waller and then have, I don't know, something else being played on the player piano pre-show. So it's kind of cool. But I can also play it. It has lights on the side. And it's really lovely to play something different like that.
It's nice that you can both experiment with songs from that particularly rich period of Tin Pan Alley songs of the 20s and 30s. But also really great that you can experiment unencumbered as a pianist as well. That's something that really comes together on this record. It's kind of guttural, and it mixes so many different styles and different approaches, which is a feast for the ears.
I always look at music or songs as small movies or films or short stories, and this particular experience was a much more cinematic, visual, creating a character out of a time, and not trying to recreate the era, but just my interpretation of 1920s music. And instead of bringing together a group of musicians like, you know, the New Orleans Nighthawks or Passing the Roof Orchestra, who would be an authentic sort of 20s band with the authentic arrangements and all the instruments. I think that what's brilliant about T-Bone is the casting. So you bring players who, Nashville bass player, Dennis Crouch, Jay Bellarose, Kefis Green, keyboard player who does everything in hip hop, or you just bring a bunch of different people together who are amazingly generous and creative and into this. They're not sitting back and saying, okay, what do you want me to do with this? We all listened to the music together and everybody played what they heard. And we weren't trying to move away from the tradition, because it doesn't make any sense to just make a loop or just for the sake of making it different. So we wanted to kind of honor the way the songs were originally played, but for everybody to come in and have their own sort of a generosity of spirit, I think. You have to take yourself always out of yourself and not listen to yourself. Whenever I get frustrated, I think I have to go away from listening to myself. I listen to the other artists. And that's what we all did, and that's what we knew how to do, is to listen to each other and eye contact. It's working as a band. It's not the artist coming in and saying, okay, you guys do this and I'm over in the booth here. It's a very different way of making music. And it was like that working with Paul McCartney as well. It was very much a collaborative. I mean, Paul's a band leader, he knows what he wants, but he's very, very much a musician's musician, and making everybody feel really good. And what are we going to do now? Do you like this? And it was all of us figuring it out and being creative at the time, on the spot, being part of it, figuring it out as we're there. What are we going to do with this today? And I think that's the most creative and lovely way to do things.
Well, there's a palpable influence from country music, and, you know, in with the sort of prairie lullaby and, you know, a broad range of different approaches that seep into that area of music in the most beautiful way. And the next track that we're going to listen to is Wide River to Cross. Tell us a little bit about that piece for you.
I love Buddy Miller, but I'd never heard of him before. Mm-hmm. I guess 3 years ago, I went to see him in Vancouver in concert, and he sang the song, and I was just like, wow. And I just fell in love with his music. It's like a hymn. It really is like a gospel tune.
There's a sorrow in the wind blowing down the road I've been. I can hear it cry while shadows steal the sun, but I cannot look back now. Come too far to turn around, and there's still
grass. That was Diana Krall from her new album Glad Rag Doll. The last tune we're going to listen to is Lonely Avenue, and this is quite a standout piece for me because both you and Mark play off of the lyric, you know, you share, and then you play off of each other, and I love the quotes, you know, that you just hit at the end in your second improvisation when he hits that flat five and you just sings.
Oh, the train, yeah,
train,
yeah. Maybe that's a little corny, but that's what happens. What I like about this record is there's no fades. I mean, I'm sure there's radios, but nobody said to us, you know, you have to fade that, or we should do a fade here. They just let it go.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And at one point, I think Rebo's got his playing the guitar with his car keys. At one point, you know, so he's great. I just love Mark Rebo. I've always have, but he's just phenomenal. There's only I love him, I hate him. Because he's so, it's just one of him. And he could just, there's lots of great players that I'm very, very lucky to play with. And he's certainly on the top of the list.
Well, this gathering and this band and this record, I think, really mark a wonderful turning point in your creativity, or a lovely new story as you develop as an artist.
And, thank you. And I had a heck of a good time doing it. I mean, it was so fresh, and I kind of have to be careful how I word this, because I mean, I had ideas in my head, and I called T-Bone the day before, and I said, what the hell are we doing? I don't know what we're doing. 20s music, I don't know what we're doing. And he's like, don't worry about it, it's going to be great. And let it happen, you know, instead of making a plan. And to get in there and hear that, I just felt like a little kid where I was going to the studio for the first time, and there weren't any ideas of, well, we got to kind of go here, or, you know, we got to make sure that we get a Nat Cole in here, or this. There was nothing like that. It was completely, like, creatively, like, it was almost like working with people who never, it just was a don't look back situation where you just went forward, and I had such a great time. And it was such a surprise to hear back more than I ever imagined, and I think that's why it was such a creative thing to do, because there was no preconceived idea other than we're just doing 20s tunes, and I like these tunes, and how are we going to do this? And then you get people like Revo and Jay and Dennis and Kefis, and next thing you know, you've got, you know, a Spike Jonze shotgun at the beginning of the one. I said to Kefis, I said, you don't have like a ricochet, do you? And he's like, I was like, okay, now we're going all Spike Jonze on this. But it's that's how it started, just with that's how we do it.
You know? Well, it's very honest, and I think a very successful album. I'm sure you're proud of it, and it's an absolute pleasure to listen to it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm really excited about it. I'm excited about everything I've done, but to go into a place where you're not sure, like, I know how to do this, and I've done it, and I've done this, and to put yourself in a position of where you don't know exactly, you know, maybe 10% of what you're going, you have an idea, but to come in completely with a open mind and trust of people, and that they're going to take you where, you know, to these beautiful places was pretty exciting for me. And you want to feel like a little kid, you want to feel creatively like, well, this is a whole new thing, and it feels comfortable. It's not like trying on a new suit. This is something that it's been in my heart for many, many years. I just haven't known how to do it right, you know.
Bring that aspect out. Diana, thank you so much.
Thank you. You're a pleasure. You're so lovely and such a great artist. I admire you so much.
Well, it's beautiful to see you.
Yeah, I could talk to you for a long time, too. No.
Thank you, Diana. Well, let's have a listen to Lonely Avenue.
I could die, I could cry, I could cry, I could cry. I live on a lonely avenue.
Lonely Avenue from Glad Rag Doll. And my thanks to Diana Krall, and the album is out now on Decca. Well, that's almost it for today's edition of the show. Next week, a preview of this year's London Jazz Festival, plus music from Alan Barnes and his band recorded at the Fairfield Halls in celebration of the venue's 50th anniversary. We finish tonight with the opening track from the brand new album of trumpeter Matthew Hulsall. This is Cherry Blossom from me, Julian Joseph. Till next time, bye-bye.
Hello and welcome to BBC Radio 3 Through the Night with me, Jonathan Swain. Books to Huda and Bach for this next couple of hours with, by way of an interval, Tchaikovsky's Rococo Variations, among other things. Books to Huda is the main focus of this concert from the 2011 Rhine Vocal Festival, the Rhine Valley of the famous singing Lorelei in the heart of Germany. Ensemble Café Zimmermann are the performers. And the Buxtehude pieces are mainly cantatas of his for a solo singer plus chamber ensemble. Buxtehude himself, in a nutshell, was the greatest German composer between Schütz and Bach. And this is a Buxtehude setting of Martin Luther's words on the ascension of Christ. Gen Himmel zu dem Vater mein.